Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a sheep.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Good morning again, and good morning again, Shane Keegan. Only Shane Keegan, but that's all we need on this lovely Monday morning. How are you keeping?
Not too bad now. We've got this nailed down as a duo, I think, at this stage, don't we?
I was going to say, at what point, I'm looking forward to obviously where we are recording obviously this over Zoom, but like, I don't know. We have to get together here now and mano.
will we even allow Gav back in?
I don't know. See, I'm expecting Gav. I know Gav is obviously, I'm not sure if he's actually gone away on holiday, because I'll be honest, when someone goes away, I don't want to be like bothering them, but I fully expect he's going to come back with a load of new golf gear. remember the master stuff he was wearing, these are things you just have to deal with. I was like,
defected to the 42.ie golf podcast.
I know. That won't be long before that's happened. When are the majors starting? No, there's the majors starting. Yeah. Soon enough.
He'll have little to no interest in who the next Ireland manager is by that stage, will he?
I know, yeah. Well, in fairness, hopefully by the time he's back. I think he's back on Wednesday. I don't think there'll be an appointment then. But it's like, I wrote the piece over the weekend about it, because for our listeners who are also readers, hopefully would have saw the article that I had over the weekend about from Newport when they spent the day over there. And it wasn't ideal, because that's obviously when one of the stories broke about the fact that the appointment for Lee Carsley was imminent. And then I was getting messages from people, like you would have been as well. I'll be honest, I was getting messages from people saying, Jez, I'm surprised. I can't believe he's taking it. I wasn't expecting him to take it. Other people getting in touch saying, has he got his staff sorted? Obviously already wanting to make sure that they might get in for the job. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to speak to the actual people who were definitive and saying, yeah, it was happening. Because then, literally, was it within the day, it became clear that actually maybe people had jumped the gun a little bit in terms of who were maybe giving out information about what was actually happening. And it now seems as if that maybe Carsley had cooled on this job even a few weeks ago, and that the meetings that have been happening over the last little while haven't actually felt as if, well, yeah, he's definitely down to actually want this. And now, when you read as an Irish reporter, wasn't it, by Mark McCadden of the Irish Star and the Mirror over the weekend, that Neil Lennon was interviewed properly, I think, over the weekend on Friday or Thursday. And we're kind of at the stage now where it's, regardless of what happens now, it feels as if no matter what happens now, it's just going to be a bit of an underwhelming end to this. Not that I don't think we're expecting a blockbuster appointment, but I think Carsley seemed to be the one that for a lot of people were like, right, this is a fella who could be on the up. Maybe a bit of the unknown, because let's be honest, you don't know what's gonna happen, and now it just feels a bit different, I don't know.
Yeah, we had, not to jump from one story to another, but obviously we had the match on, the United Cup match on yesterday in the house, myself and the young lad, and my wife was kind of just pottering around in the background, and Neil Lennon had been on the panel for the game the previous day as well, I think, hadn't he, on Premier? I'm trying to think who played the day before. Evan Ferguson, Brighton, and he'd been on the panel for that programme as well, and... Roisin looks up at the telly and she goes, oh, that lad's never off the telly lately and I don't like him. There's something about him. I just don't like him. And I smirk and I says, by all accounts, he's set to be the new Ireland manager. What? she was not happy. She's no idea who Neil Lennon is in reality. She just has decided she doesn't like the look of him or something. But yeah, Neil Lennon is,
What's the case? What's the case? I'll be honest, some of it, I know, he's a manager with an awful lot of experience, but, why would you reckon is there a bit of a downer on Neil Lennon? Is it because he's not perceived to be kind of up and coming? He's not perceived to be kind of maybe a bit more at the forefront of maybe where the game is going in terms of the next little while?
I think so.
And maybe just because he's been around the block a little bit?
I think so, yeah. A lot of those things. Look... Like, he's had success. There's no doubt he's had success. It's just, like, in terms of... A couple of things for me, okay? So first, in terms of style of play, like, as a public, we don't seem to be very enthused by Martin O'Neill's era and Martin O'Neill since he left the gig. And, I mean, when I think of Martin O'Neill, like his greatest lieutenant is Neil Lennon. Like Neil, you know, they had an unbelievable relationship as a coach and a player. And I would see Neil Lennon as being very, very Martin O'Neill like in terms even of his managerial style. Since he's gone into it, they both had massive success as Celtic managers. They're both very pragmatic. I think they're both I wouldn't say stuck in the old days or anything, but I don't think there would be, you know, I can't imagine Neil Lennon from, you know, a couple of people that I've spoken to who'd know him a hell of a lot better than I would. You know, I don't think he'd be massive into the kind of more new age approach, maybe in terms of coaching styles and analysis and all of that kind of thing. And I think people were maybe just expecting something a bit flashier, almost, for a better word. I struggle to find a better word than flashier. But at the same time, if it wasn't going to be Carsley, I always struggled to see who the hell was it going to be.
Yeah, because now obviously there's stuff about the wages as well, isn't there? It's kind of upwards of maybe $500,000, which is not bad. It's not bad, but that's the kind of the ballpark. When you look at maybe managers in the Championship where the average is like £1 million a year and stuff like that, like that kind of gives you an indication of where you're looking. And like it goes back to what we were when we did that kind of two-part pod at the end of the year, and we were kind of just discussing that there's a risk associated with this on all sides. Do you know what I mean? But the biggest risk is really coming into where Ireland are at, and well, like especially for a young manager. Like if you're an aspiring manager coming through, the reason why it would appeal is because it would seem as if you're going to be getting a minimum of 4.5 years. In the job.
Yeah,
that's why you would say, like, let's be honest, like a lot of people will apply purely on the basis that you're going to have job security for 4.5 years on a decent wage. And that's where you're like, well, are you going to get lads who are coming up and want to have that, and maybe think, well, actually, you know, club football? Because you would like to think, you would imagine a lot of young coaches, and like, I speak to you as a coach as well, they're going to be wanting to be in a job day to day. You know what I mean? Like, how is the job just better actually for someone who you just say, well, do you know what, we're going to just need someone who will be prepared maybe to work in this kind of dynamic that Mark Cannon wants within the kind of structure of the FAI. Like, you know, obviously he wants to have that base where the manager is based out of Abbottstown and is present and isn't maybe just like a figurehead who is separate, because that's obviously how it was happening with Stephen Kenny. It was definitely more so a case of he was a much more of a presence around the place. But like, what the point I'm kind of looking at is, and I've just been thinking about this over the weekend as well, when you look at all the different factors that are at play now, like the fact that there's no qualifiers this year, obviously there's going to be a few friendlies in March. I know Jonathan Hill had said he wants someone in for when the Nations League draw is made on the 8th of February, but don't necessarily think that's a deadline you need to kind of stick to rigidly at this point. But then you've got the Nations League games now. Is it just someone you need to come in, we're saying there, who's just actually a good man manager, a good person who doesn't need to be the international football, doesn't need to try to be like changing the world in terms of what's happening with how they play and stuff, but more so is just capable of galvanizing a group of players? Because you forget about it, like there was a lot of positivity spoken about this in terms of players from what Stephen Kenny was doing and in terms of how he dealt with players and how the coaching staff dealt with players, because results tapered off so badly, and you would imagine there's going to be a lack of confidence. Like, is it more important actually to try and just get that fella who has that power of the personality a little bit about it to actually bring a bit of that feel good factor back a little bit, while also making sure that culture structure within it maintains the levels as well? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, a couple of points on what you said there. All right, I think basically what we're trying to say in terms of the bracket that we were going to have to pull from is, Which side of the two ends of the spectrum do we go with? Do we go with a manager who has a lot of experience, but maybe whose CV, you know, isn't wonderful? Because if his CV was wonderful, he'd be getting a job that's probably more higher paid than the Irish job. And look, again, Neil Lennon's won a hell of a lot with Celtic, but I suppose the argument is most managers in recent years have won a hell of a lot with Celtic. But we either have to go with something on that end of the sphere. So, you know, the likes of some of the names that were being bounced around, like a Steve Bruce, or I think Chris Coleman's name has been bounced around at one stage, Neil Lennon, they kind of all fall into a similar-ish category. Or do you go the complete opposite end and somebody who's completely kind of unproven at the highest level, and that you're rolling the dice with a little bit. And Carsley did still fall into that bracket to a certain extent. You know, obviously there was talks of Anthony Barry at one stage. Even if you look at, you know, Duffer would still have fallen into a category like that, I suppose, to a certain extent. And I think most people would have veered towards trying to pull somebody from the latter category rather than the former, if that makes sense. Whereas it looks as though we're probably going to end up with somebody from the former category. The point that you make at the end is the huge one for me is, like, Neil Lennon, I would think Neil Lennon is a decent man manager. I would imagine he's a very good man manager. So there is the potential for it to work really well. The key question here for me is, who is the coaching staff? You know, who is the coaching staff? If he could bring in a coach who is maybe a little bit, maybe more, you know, newer or maybe a bit fresh ideas and that kind of stuff, and Neil takes a hands-off approach almost to the training ground and says, listen, I'm just going to deal with the player management and match day tactics and all of that kind of stuff, and I'm going to give this young up-and-coming coach his head in terms of being innovative on the training ground with the players and driving the performance analysis in the background and all of those kinds of things. You know, maybe something like that could work. Maybe something like that could work. I'm not too sure who his staff would have been previously. Look, managers do tend to go back to what they had in the past. I mean, I think his most recent job, am I right? His most recent job was in Cyprus.
Cyprus, yeah. I remember he managed a team. I remember going to the game. They played United in the Europa League. Was it Nicosia, I think it was. He was in there. This is the thing I'm going on that. Like, they frustrated the life out, you know, it was the last minute goal in that game. But I'm just thinking, like, if you're listening to this, if you're an Ireland fan listening to this now and we're chatting, because even over the weekend, like, I made the point, it does seem to be in a bit of confusion where it seems to be in a case of, I think some people within the FAI maybe felt something was happening, whereas the people who were actually in the room dealing with this realised actually there was something different happening in terms of where the search was at, in terms of, you hear about the contrast and of basically what was about to happen in terms of the appointment. Do you know what I mean? But, like, if you're looking at it now, you're thinking, well, look, what's the most important thing here? Like, is it just getting a manager who can come in and can just try and, like, we said this before, but, like, just how do you build? I'm guessing you're building the team around Evan Ferguson. That's basically what's going to be coming in and happening. But, like, getting a manager, I would say I would be at the, I'm going to more so now lean into the point of view of getting to a manager who's actually just, like, even if they're a bit older, just absolutely experienced at international level and have maybe had a few jobs. And fair enough, if it's not exciting, fair enough, like, that's all right. Like, but if they're proven, like, Ireland need to be going out and getting a manager who's proven, and or these would be the criteria if I was sitting down and picking the job, who's proven at international level over a long period of time with countries of a calibre of where Ireland right now that are at a bit of a low ebb, have got a little bit of potential, but just need a focus and direction. And, like, whether or not it's what people are going to want, but it's what the actual squad needs. That's there. They
so you wouldn't have given it to Carsley then, based on that criteria.
At this moment, well, see, again, over the last little while, no, I wouldn't have. Now, I could see why, and he's done at an international level to a degree with the 21s, England 21s, but it's a totally different kettle of fish. Like, it's a different calibre level of football, first of all. He's got an extremely gifted player pool, and depth is incredible. It's totally different. Now, he's well versed in international management in terms of the dynamics of it, not the day-to-day, being able to do all the stupid stuff, but, like, all the planning that goes around it and stuff like that that people wouldn't consider. And you know yourself as a manager and as a coach about just how the sessions would run, how the weeks would run, stuff like that, of the what works for players. Stuff like that is important in terms of for it or whatever. But then it's more so, and doesn't have to, when I'm saying about experience, I'm not saying about someone who's at the latter stage of their career maybe, and maybe just sees that as a handy gig, but someone who is just well versed in international management. Just maybe more so over what's happened over the last couple of years, whatever. I just feel it just needs someone who comes in straight away and isn't, not that Stephen Kenny was doing this, although he mentioned the times he was, not learning on the job. Like, he was an experienced manager at club level. It's a different dynamic. But then just thinking, even over the last, over a little while, just someone who is coming in, and like what you're saying there, is going in, bish bash bosh, and saying, right, this is my staff, this is how I'm going to do it, just brings a complete clarity of what's going to be happening. So as soon as he do start, like, obviously he's going to be finding out about the players, but just has his ways and goes in and has that experience at international level with a kind of style of what an Ireland team is. I mean, not mean style of players, I mean where we're at, you know, like struggling a little bit, have a bit of potential, lacking in confidence, and just needs a bit of a boost. That's where I would say, if a manager who has a track record in at those elements, that should come in. That would be the priority for me, more so rather than someone coming in and maybe taking risk. Because let's be honest, like, we wanted that with Stephen Kenny. Like, as soon as he gets a couple, the new manager comes in and does a few bad results, because there's going to be bumps in the road with this team. It's going to be the same old tropes we're throwing out about senior football. It's all about results. It's all about that. You can't be planning blah, blah, blah. Let all the stuff about the planning for the future happen and make sure, because that's what Cannon's working on as well, the player pathway beneath that. And maybe in about 10 years, you might have a different approach to who you appoint as manager. But I think I'm kind of accepting it now, the realism is you just need someone who has vast experience international level with teams that are similar in nature to Ireland that just need to fight and be capable of doing up again, of being up against that, against the odds.
And is there anybody who comes to mind that fits that criteria?
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, this is just what I'd be looking at. Do you know, if you imagine the CVs have been landing in and they're going through, but if I am picking out and you're kind of saying discarding, you're putting them in the definites for interview, you're putting them in the maybes, they're the questions that I would be looking at. And like, I know we've spoken about this in the past, but like, I don't know what your thought would be on it in terms of just going in, because there'd be some managers who maybe interview well and they don't deliver. I would just be looking purely on the basis of what they've already achieved. But then flip side, and we're going on a circus here, but flip side, those type of managers are probably thinking, don't want the Ireland job. Hmm. They're not maybe applying for it. Do you know? That's where it's like, where's the risk, you know?
Yeah. And look, I mean, you speak about managers who interview well and then maybe don't deliver. Like, again, for me, that's where, like, you look at an inter-county GEA job now. Like, when somebody goes for an interview, like, there's more talk around, well, what is your backroom team? Who's filling what roles? Who's doing this? Who's doing that? Like, that has to be a huge part of, and it probably doesn't exist as much in football, in soccer, to be honest with you. It's like, who's the manager? Okay, yeah, he sounds good. Grand, we'll give it to him. Whereas, you know, particularly with an international role here like this, I think it's got to be, well, what is the package? What's the actual package here? Who are, you know, who is going to lead the coach and who's doing this role? Who's your goalkeeping coach? You know, are you bringing in a performance psychologist? You know, I know we don't seem to have had that role filled too often. I think Ford was doing a bit of it maybe. You know, I could get a lot more excited about the Neil Lennon appointment if I heard some impressive names that were potentially coming on board with him. Mm. And I mean, you talk about the amount of CVs, you know, and CVs that should be flooding in. Like, you would love to know who has actually applied for this job. Like, is that, or does anybody apply for the job? Do you wait to be approached, or do you apply for the job? What way does the process actually work?
I'd say there is that mix, isn't there? You know yourself, there can be managers and someone who have already done it where they'll do an interview with someone or they'll do a podcast, and that's their way of saying, yeah, I'm into it, rather than formally handing in their CV. Because there's some managers who will be like, ah, that's beneath me to actually apply for the job. You can come to me if you want to speak to me. Which, that's what happens with some, you know. Maybe it's going to be that mixture, isn't it? You probably get some CVs from coaches and managers, and then they would have had their own kind of shortlist or people in mind, and then stuff where they get approached by agents as well. That's just the nature of it, isn't it? It's like, but this is another aspect to it as well, where like Mark Canham is the one driving this. He's the director of football. That's the one who Jonathan Hill, I know Jonathan Hill has been involved, Paddy Bonner has kind of been involved as well, obviously as a director, in terms of maybe more so with the whittling down process. But you kind of feel like he hasn't got a huge amount of credit in the bank in terms of, because he's relatively new to the job, and people are kind of looking at him thinking, well, do you know, the contacts he might have and the experience he would have with like doing this, that's another aspect to this as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if it was one of them where, if you're looking from the club point of view, where it's someone going in and they have a kind of some experience, they have like a CV saying, right, well, I did this and I brought this person in X, Y, and Z over the years, right, what's that word? What's the trust the process? That's where you're here. But it's that's where it's difficult to kind of, that's where, again, we wrote about over the weekend, just about the bit of, a little bit of the confusion, because it does even feel like that. If Carsley, Lee Carsley is one person and Neil Lennon's another, who they seem to be the top two, like their profiles as
very different
are very different. And that
very, very
that different. Just kind of strikes me as, well, hold on, like, how is this getting led? Is this getting led by people making themselves available, like being agent led or being led by that? Or is it actually, you would like to think, Janie Mac, if Lee Carsley was your number one choice, well, then your number two and three and four choice are going to be of a similar
profiles. Yeah, you know? 100%. And this is where I'm saying, this is why I'm genuinely interested to know what has been the recruitment strategy here, okay? Because in my opinion, be it in sport or in business, if a role needs to be filled, okay, I would put it out there to see what applications come in, and maybe a surprise application would come in that you're thinking, yeah, Jesus, that's not a bad one, that makes sense. But that would almost be secondary to the fact that what I'd really be doing is I would be writing up my list of my top three, top five who fit the criteria of what we want, and I would be going after them, not waiting for them to come and apply for the job. I would be going after those people, and you obviously start at the top and go after the first one, and if that's not doable, well, then you move to the second one, and maybe two names on that five might, or one name on that five might end up being somebody who actually did apply for the job. But like, just sitting around and waiting to see what comes in, like, to me, that makes absolutely no sense. I'm not convinced that we've been imaginative enough here, that they've actually, you know, you've laid out a bit of criteria that I broadly agree with. Surely, if you sat down and trawled the names that are in football management in the world, you could come up with a few who tick the boxes that you're after calling out there and are somewhat reasonably gettable.
Gus Poyet. Going to be speaking to him later. There'll be some kind of formal later on of clarity on that, if he's someone that they've spoken to, or if he's someone who could be even in the mix, because he's doing a Zoom call with journalists later on this afternoon. I don't think it's him necessarily doing it just because he's touting for the job. It is for some it's for a promotional gig that is flagged. But
that's a well-timed promotional gig.
I know, he's clearly got a very good agent.
I Almost to get your brain ticken over, I do tend to jump to bookmakers' lists just to see what they're saying and what names are there and whether there's somebody outside the box that even they suggest. Looking here at the moment, in order of kind of favourite out from there, it's Neil Lennon, Gus Poyet, Roy Keane, Lee Carsley, Chris Hughton, Chris Coleman, Anthony Barry, who we're never going to get, Sam Allardyce, Robbie Keane, Harry Redknapp. They're the runners and riders under 25-1. like, that's not exactly the most imaginative. There's nobody that you'd call outside the box really there, is there?
No, but that's just an indication, I suppose, with a bit of where the order at as well. Obviously, Jurgen Klopp isn't on that list. I don't know if there are many Liverpool fans listening to this today, if they're still in their period of mourning, but if they're just like avoiding all stuff. But came out of nowhere, didn't it? Came out with a blow.
Absolute. Couldn't. Because of the era that we live in of fake news and all that, my instant reaction was, bullshit. Now, this is a. And the next thing I saw it under the official Liverpool Twitter feed, and I was like, holy shit, where has that come out of?
Yeah.
I'd love to know his thought process. I'd love to know where his head is at, or what has brought him to this conclusion.
It seems to just be an element of he feels that he's close to burnout. That's what essentially, that's, if you're taking him at face value of what he was saying, you know, was it in November he kind of made it clear that this was what he was thinking? And I'm guessing, obviously, people would say, why is he said it now? Because I'm guessing, like, it would have come out, because you'd imagine now, like, Liverpool are going to be sounding out people for the next little while. We get in touch with Mark Cannon for, just for advice. but not that. Although I don't think there'd be too much of a crossover in candidates selection for that. But that's obviously why they've done it, is because clearly, like, it's going to be getting ramped up over the next little while. You can't really kind of guess about how it's going to affect Liverpool. I didn't see it affect them at the weekend. Really, they were very impressive again against Norwich. But it's just going to be a big change for the club, because it's someone who. Like I've seen it even with some United fans saying, you know, what he's actually won over the time, but it's one of them where, like, he's totally transformed that club, like, as a personality. You look at where Liverpool were at, and even coming through the kind of the Hicks and Gillette years, and who managers that were there and players that were there, and he's just, his personality has kind of just revitalised that club, you know.
Nah, he's done an absolutely phenomenal job. I don't see even the most ardent United anti-Liverpool fan to do well now to argue that he hasn't done a phenomenal job over the last few years. I think by and large, outside of the Liverpool fan base, I think by and large he's quite well liked. Now look, like all of us, I suppose, to a certain extent, he can get a bit sulky and a bit spiky when results don't go his way or when a decision doesn't go his way. He has had his moments where he's thrown the ties out of Prem here and there, all right. But again, you know, you probably do need to have that side to you. You probably do need to be a bad loser to be a good winner. I'm intrigued on two fronts. I'm intrigued as to where he'll end up next, because he is the sort of manager who I would, you know, be capable following around and seeing how things work out in him and
Real Madrid.
Do you reckon? Yeah,
he's gonna be. I reckon Ancelotti. Did Ancelotti stay? Is he staying now for another year or so?
He did take a Brazil job. Back the Brazil job, didn't he?
My thinking, I would say. It doesn't strike me. It's weird though. Real Madrid doesn't strike me as a Klopp club. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? He's even like Dortmund. Like, was it Mainz, Dortmund, Liverpool? Yeah.
Clubs where he can build something rather than be expected to just spend lots of money and deliver instant success.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is though, I don't think he necessarily will be needed if he was. I'm saying Real Madrid because I'm just thinking who was the kind of, because they're a club of his stature now. You know what I mean? That's where I'm thinking of, and a job that's probably going to become available soon enough in terms of or whatever. But I'm just thinking. And also, you're saying about building, you kind of could, because if you look at the kind of age profile of that Madrid team now, it's built for someone to actually be there with them for the long haul and make them into something great. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are already some smashing players there, obviously. But
just wonder, do Real do long haul? I'm not so sure if they...
Maybe not. No, well, like, you never know. Like, well, sorry, but that was, in terms of clubs, I was just looking, I was thinking that was the one that would jump to me in terms of down the line, because it seems as if he wants to do what he's kind of doing what Guardiola. Do you remember Guardiola, where he kind of left and had a sabbatical and went off and was able to enjoy his life for a bit, because that was something that he flagged as well, wasn't it, about just feeling as if he could have a normal life? Because can I imagine how consuming, like, I got a tiny kind of indication of it at the weekend last week when I was over in Newport with Graham Coughlin and Joe Dunn, and you see the hours they put in and stuff that they would be talking about and stuff, but
utterly consuming.
You know yourself.
Utterly consuming. Like, you're either doing stuff in relation to the job, or, like, unfortunately, like any hour of the day where you're not doing something in relation to the job, you have this guilt that you should be doing something in relation to the job. That's how I found it anyway.
I know what you mean.
So you can't even enjoy the times where you're not doing work-related stuff, because you feel there's this guilt that, because it's never-ending, like, do you know what I mean? Like, most people have a job where, you know, this is the start of your working week, this is the end of your working week. Once you know you've all that done, you've done your job. Like, unfortunately, in football management, like, there's always more. You could, every single time I went into match night, I felt underprepared.
Yeah.
Every night. I never thought of all the stuff we'd covered that week. I always thought of the two or three things that we didn't get to that week. I always felt underprepared, regardless of how games were going.
And it was funny, because one of the things they worked on, because I got to watch the train, and like, unfortunately, was, like, I'm not saying this now, I think it's breaking the notes, but they were expecting, maybe, they weren't sure if Luke Shaw was going to play left back. So they were thinking, because of what they'd done the last time, it could have been either Wan-Bissaka or Dalot playing left back. So they were thinking, they were trying to make sure United play out down that side, and that was going to be their way of pressing, because a right footer on that side,
it's
going to be a bit, and like they spent a bit of time, and he said it to me, it was like along the lines of, like, this might not be needed in the match now, but we just need to do it, we need to work on it or whatever. And obviously now Shaw players, and what they worked on goes out the window a little bit, do you know what I mean? It's not it's not the case, but it's like, it's true. But it's even like Joe Dunn, and like, obviously, like, who around the game for so long, like, was manager of Colchester for a while, was in with Cambridge, he's his assistant, was chatting to him.
His by the way, his Have you ever read Living on the Volcano?
Oh, I have. Yeah.
Yeah, he has a chapter. He has a chapter to himself in that. And oh my God, it's the best chapter in the book. Maybe it's just because I'm Irish and you're looking at it through those eyes. But I thought it was the best chapter in the book, but also most heartbreaking chapter in the book as well, probably, you know?
Yeah, I haven't read that book in so long. I remember reading that book years ago, Michael Calvin's book, wasn't it? Because he's done a few, hasn't he? He's done a well where, but the young players, feck, I should have read it. Because I did a bit of research, obviously, beforehand. And I knew part of the story, obviously, like he would have, like, a lot. His father died when he was young. He left home, he was determined, went over to Gillingham, working under Damien Richardson for a while. But, like, he's been over there. But he was even made the point that, like, he was running himself into oblivion as a coach and manager, like, in terms of not seeing kids, not barely seeing his family, and was like killing himself. And you see, if you look at it, you can see it, you know. Like I said to him, like, you see what he looked like 10 years ago to what he looks like now. And you can see the effect it's had on him in terms of, but like, he's just giving his life to football. But what he's trying to now realise is trying to work, as he was saying, you don't have to kill yourself to do this job. You make sure you train, you do your work, but yeah, like what you're saying there, you're always going to maybe feel that guilt. Trying to be learned to live with it. Do you know what I mean? And try and be a bit smarter about it. Do you know what I mean? But like,
because
all you can do is your best. Do you know what I mean? And like, and once you realise that and accept it, and like,
yeah. And look, I suppose to wrap up on the Liverpool one, obviously who's going to replace him is an interesting one. Look, it does seem to me, it seems an absolute no-brainer. Like they obviously go after Xabi Alonso. Like it's just. You know, time.
Steve, it has to be.
That was the grand plan just a couple of years ago, all right, wasn't it? That the wheels fairly come off that plan, that's for sure. He's obviously doing an unbelievable job. Obviously he had a brilliant time there as a player. You know, it's just going to come down to money, isn't it? What's the length of his contract over there, and how much would it cost him to buy him out? Because you can be sure he's the one they're going after, I would have thought.
Yeah, I know that it makes sense in the sense that he's doing well at the moment. Obviously, his links to the club and stuff. But like, what happens if they have an absolute stinker of an end to the season and they throw away the league, and because they're in a really strong position and can't get over the line? Like all of a sudden, do you know what I mean? It's a different. But at the moment, he looks at Alonso. Don't get me wrong. Like the parallels would be very striking with Klopp in terms of if he was to go and get, you're going to the gym to get a manager who kind of broke that stranglehold that Munich had. Or the Bobsy Klopp had a bit more in terms of Champions League, obviously got to the final and stuff, but like, yeah, I don't know, it's definitely someone that they'll be speaking to, but it's a weird one because like, there is a very set now thing of, well, this is when we need to have a manager in by the end of the season to be working in a pre-season. Probably even sooner in terms of planning ahead, although they seem to do a bit of planning with their midfield and stuff and get that done. But like, do you try and get a manager and say, right, find out very, very quickly, yeah, this is going to be the manager, and then obviously you announce it? Or do you, if Alonso says, listen, I don't want to talk about anything to do with this until the season's finished. Can you wait that long? Mm. Can Liverpool afford to wait and not get him in? And then if something happens, or if you're Alonso, do you think, right, well, do you know what? Strike while the iron's hot. Sign a pre-contract. Because in Germany, it's one of those things where every year it seems to come out where it's like, best player in the league is going to be leaving and everyone knows they're going to Bayern Munich. So it's something that if he was to announce he was gone, that it'd be a huge deal. Do you know what I mean?
Whatever about Alonso wanting to strike while the iron's hot, you can be pretty fucking sure that his agent is going to want to strike while the iron is hot anyway, and he'll certainly be steering him towards that. No, I get your point. Like, it is still quite a small body of work that he has to show to land himself such a big job. And yet, at the same time, it's probably a bigger, more impressive body of work than Mikel Arteta would have had when he landed the Arsenal job.
And
that's worked out pretty well for them. Look, it is, you know, again, similar to the Ireland job, just on a different planet in terms of levels. It is a case of, do they go with, again, the young up and coming one who has the potential to go on to be one of a managerial great, which Xavi Alonso in his short term work has probably, you know, shown enough to potentially put himself into that bracket? Or again, do they go with your tried and trusted, been there, done that? I mean, Could they go with a managerial job swap? Could Klopp go to Madrid and Ancelotti go to Liverpool? You know, something like that.
Ancelotti's ties to Everton are too strong for him to even consider such a role.
I think they'd nearly embrace him all the more.
But it's an interesting point, because like, what is like, again, like, if you're a Liverpool now, like, and the fans, what do you want now? Do you actually want just, you know what, someone who comes in and is a bit steady for a year or so and keeps the show on the road a little bit, because Klopp has built something, so, and like, his fingerprints are all over that club and like everything about it. Do you want someone who comes in and is actually just isn't looking to maybe rip everything up, and do you know what I mean? It's a different one. Like, you don't necessarily need someone. I don't know. It's you just go for the best person, obviously. But like, it's the dynamics of what's happening at the club and like that fan base and all the rest of it. Like, if you go for an Alonso, he'll have an element of degree in the bank because he's a former player, and maybe he's viewed as someone who, because of what he's already done this season at Leverkusen, it's clear that he's capable of doing really good things with the team. Or someone who'll come in and be a bit more pragmatic in terms of saying, well, I don't have to do an awful lot here. I don't need to be the one to actually rip things. Look what Moyes did. Moyes is reflecting on this when he hit him at United by changing over all the staff. Now, I know a lot of staff are leaving, some of the coaching are leaving, but like, Moyes kind of realising that maybe he tried to do too much too soon to try and put his stamp on the club. Whereas you realise, well, you know what? Not an awful lot needs to change dramatically in terms of where the thing are at. I just need to kind of just be a bit clever about how you go approach it. This is where I'd be saying about someone like Ancelotti would actually be perfect in that sense. But I don't know, it's going to be one that Liverpool are going to have to assess, because it's going to be, you don't know what's out. Like, it's, there's no set in stone point here. It's like absolutely nailed on. Yeah, they have to get the job. It's perfect. It's going to be a degree of, well, how do people react after losing Klopp, more so than gaining a new manager? Because as much as he's a great person, that personality he had on the club, like, I know I was joking there, but like, it's going to be such a huge vacuum for a person to fill. So it's almost going to be like, how do people react without Klopp there, more so than who the new manager is? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And look, you can naturally enough, every boardroom will consider what fan reaction would be to an appointment. But you do get the vibe that Liverpool fans would be very, at this moment in time, you've made a good point. Like, you know, Alonso, it's almost impossible for Alonso's stock to get much higher than it is now, whereas the appointment isn't actually going to happen until whatever it is, 6 months' time, potentially. So yeah, is his stock going to be as high at the time that Klopp actually wraps up as it currently is? It's a fair question.
Yeah, no, that's the one. It's like, I don't know. But then you'd imagine that, like that, like, obviously that's going to be different, where you would imagine that they're going to do an extensive enough search and have an idea of who they want. Do you know what I mean? You would imagine that's what's going to happen. It's not as if they'll say, well, he has to be the manager. It'd be different if Alonso had maybe won a couple of leagues already with Leverkusen and had maybe done what Klopp done, where like managed really well in Europe and got, you know, like, well, he's shown what he's capable of if he has moves on to the next level in the Premier League with maybe a bit more money and more resources and better players, that he'll get more out of him. It's still
having read his book, I can absolutely guarantee you one name that will be putting himself forward will be Pep Linders. You know, the book was actually very, very good. But I mean, how many assistant managers have ever actually had their own book? This guy is a guy, like, he's actually gone off already, didn't he? He headed off and managed, who was it, NEC in the Netherlands for a season. Like, he's firm. Sometimes you've got, you know, coaches, assistant managers who like that role and want to stay in that role. Like, Linders absolutely has his eyes on management long term, I would think. So I think he will certainly be making a play for the gig, and given that he's got a tight relationship with Klopp, obviously, I think he'll be trying to use Klopp's influence to put himself in with a decent chance.
Yeah, because like, I'm surprised, because you would have thought, I'll be honest, I don't think that would have happened, because I think if that's what we're going to do, considering he was gone in November, he said it in November, like, if they had said, right, he's gone and this is the plan, Linder's going to come in after, he's gone as well. So I would have thought that they would have had time if they felt, and if Klopp felt, well, in fairness, he said that he's not going to have anything to deal with this, who actually gets the job, whatever. So, but you would imagine, like, if they were thinking with it, well, do you know what, he's capable of maintaining what Klopp has built and doing on it, that kind of announcement would have been done at the same time, because it would have struck.
Yeah, very true.
It would have struck me. I imagine if it could have, like, oh well, we've been a bit, but actually we're going to just give it to the assistant, and not that that's a bad thing in that regard. I just mean in terms of if they felt, well, no, he's the man who, cause that's what Liverpool have done in the past, wasn't it? Obviously when Shankly left them, was it Fagan before Paisley, or did Fagan follow Paisley? I can't remember.
Oh, you got me on the spot.
It doesn't matter, but like,
the whole fans will be spitting at us at the moment.
Listen,
that we don't know such history.
I'm used to that, don't care. listen, I've been in the away and in the Anfield. I'm used to worse things coming up. Liverpool fans there, I can tell you that for nothing, absolutely nothing. Well, there is actually still more FA Cup matches going on as well. Like, there's there, like, who is it? Because Jerry, I don't know if you got a chance to read it this morning, but Paul Fennell wrote a piece, with O'Connell. It's mad already, 10 years since he made his debut with Celtic alongside Van Dijk. Remember meeting O'Connell. It's worth to read that piece as well, just because, again, it kind of similar details,
really
just details where your career can go and stuff that you have to deal with. And again, that perseverance. It's such a common theme. People are probably sick of stuff that I write about it, but it's just so true. Like, you were even saying it there as a manager, but like, if you don't actually like love it and have it be in you, you won't last. Like, it's just, I know it's so obvious, you know what I mean, but it's true. Like if you're not at all the time, you're just going to be gone out of the game. So we even, like, I saw one of the comments about it, you know, he left and went to Wrexham for money, because that was the first person in the world to ever leave another job because they were getting more money, like. And but like, I remember seeing him at Rochdale when he was there with a few Irish, like Stephen Dooley was there, Jimmy Keohane was there, actually Ryan Delaney, he wasn't there, I think he was there at the time he came on loan the following season, but obviously Brian Bernie Murphy as well. And it was actually now at Man City. And again, we're talking about Ireland jobs and all the rest of it. Or you would imagine someone who might have been in the mix, because I know he was touted before. I think Stephen Kenny wanted him to come in at one point as one of the coaches, but I think Man City have that policy of no double jobbing.
That's right.
So he didn't do it. But it's just, I don't know, it's just because obviously the FA Cup. But again, someone like Owen O'Connell just shows, like, starts his career alongside Virgil van Dijk, and then you just have to fight to make sure you earn it and keep on going your career, no matter where it is.
That's it. And like, I've made this point before, that the likes of an Owen O'Connell today and the likes of a Ryan Delaney and McLaughlin yesterday, I mean, you know, there's almost a kind of who are they? Do you know, they're tipping away there at the lower leagues, it's not very glamorous and all that kind of crack. Like, they are the massive, massive success stories in Irish football, because they represent that what is a 2% of people who actually, you know, all these up and coming young people who think they're going to have amazing careers and all that kind of stuff, like, to have just the durability to be able to have a 10-year career over there around the lower divisions makes them they're phenomenally successful people. Absolutely phenomenal. They have smashed the odds. Absolutely smashed the odds in achieving what they have achieved. Look, obviously, you know, Ryan in particular yesterday for me was brilliant to see him at that level. He was only a kid when he won the league with us at Wexford Youths, but always an unbelievable attitude. And you could nearly see that attitude in his performance yesterday, couldn't you? The way he, you know, the amount of last gasp blocks he made, and I was delighted to see commentary kind of praising that, because I thought he had a super game. And Owen is the same. You would really, you know, I will, you know, put it this way. Remove an Irish guy like that from the equation and I would have no interest in turning on that game whatsoever. But immediately, by inserting somebody like that into the scenario, we had it a couple of years ago, didn't we, with Pod Jammond, who's just come across the Waterford now. Like, you know, it was so enjoyable watching Podge lighten up the FA Cup there for a couple of seasons. There's no doubt it heightens the interest over here when there's some, but you know, I do think some people can be dismissive of what they've achieved. I don't think they realise how unbelievably against the odds they've managed to pull off something like this.
That's and even just the number of players, because obviously it's constantly the number of players all the time around who are like vying for contracts, and it was one of the things that kind of struck me from being over there last week, is like you see at one point. Like, there's the young lad, Josh Sebri, who had signed from Shelbourne, had like, wasn't even on a pro contract at Shells, did a bit of training with the first team, with the Duff, didn't make a first team appearance, was doing really well, for the 19s, And like that, kind of an agent, this is, you know, sometimes they get a bad rep and some of them deserve it, but sometimes they can do good work where, you know, gets them a weekend trial over there with Newport, turns into 2 weeks, turns into a 2.5 year contract on the basis that, right, there's a player there, we'll give him a go and see how they can do it. You know, like on the pins, people think he's probably gone over there and cracked it, like, but on the pins, you see where they're training. Like, it was that Roadstone out with Sean McGrovers the day before I went over. Like, I know where Harrow would be training every day. You know what I mean? Like Newport were training on a rugby pitch. That's where they weren't able to train, like, on a full-size football pitch. It was, like, literally on a rugby pitch. But you see, but they made the best of it. But even with someone like Josh, like, he ends up, because of injuries, at no point where they expect, I think they were expecting to play to make between 8 and 10 appearances this season. But, like, not talking starts, we're talking, like, get in around the first team squad, do a bit of training, get built up, all the rest of it. Then because of injuries, he's thrown in. He's by October, at the start of the season, he's first choice to centre back alongside Roy Delaney. Do you know what I mean? And then breaks his leg. Do you know what I mean? So he's gone from this high, and this is where I'm saying, and he was talking about dealing with it, and he's already saying where it's like his right foot will never be the same again in terms of ligament getting sewn back on. He's got a plate in it. You know, you won't be able to bend it a certain way. But his attitude was, and it's probably the reason why he got that 2.5 year contract, he goes, I've got a new normal now and I have to make sure it's better than the old normal. Rather than being depressed out of his head and feeling sorry for himself, which is the easiest thing in the world to do, and don't mean depressed, but like I just mean thinking, oh, that was my chance gone now. Whereas he's in the gym ahead of schedule, already thinking, I'm going to get back better. And I think it's because of that environment, 100%, he's like being around it, like there's accountability there, but there's an openness around the place, you know what I mean? Where people talk, and even Mark O'Brien, another fella in the article who, like, literally forced hearts, open heart surgery at 16, another one at 27, had to retire, he's 31, he's still around the club now as a kind of a liaison officer for our players, and just someone who was attitude on life. And I just think those kind of characters, again, he's from Dublin, like those kind of characters around the place are so important to kind of, for a lad like Josh, because he was the one who came away thinking of, because I'm thinking he's the one whose career, everything's all ahead of him. And you can see, like, he was on the same schoolboy team as Evan Ferguson, do you know what I mean? And he made the point, people think, like, what Evan Ferguson's doing is somehow normal, where it's not. His journey already is the one that seems is the more normal, and it's how he deals with those knocks. He's already kind of, he was one I came away thinking of. I'm like,
yeah, look,
see how he goes, you know.
Like, in terms of as I say, durability or the chances of having a career in the lower divisions, like, mentality absolutely trumps ability. There are, you know, there are, with, and I mean, this is a compliment to Ryan. I've had players at Ryan's age who absolutely had more ability than Ryan had at his age, yet they have got absolutely, a lot of them aren't even playing football at all anymore. And whereas he's lining out against Manchester United yesterday is pretty amazing in that sense. And like you just mentioned the name Evan Ferguson, where the match made in heaven is when you have that ability, but you've also got that mentality. If Evan Ferguson didn't have as much ability as he has, Evan Ferguson does strike me as the kind of fella who would actually have no problem carving out a 10-year career in the lower divisions, because he's also got the mentality, you know?
So it's the full package. And tell you what way to end it, because next week we will be the full package, because I know Gav will be back.
We will be the full package ourselves.
I know. Well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. even though I tried it.
Great stuff.
That's it from us. So have a good week, Shane. I'll chat to you soon, okay? Take care, man.
Cheers, David.